Good morning. Today's daf and sifas is daf chaf. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as zechon nishmas liba Gabriela Bashmuel, also leilui nishmas Ashrat bat mashallah. Okay. The gemara we are in New Testament Beis. We are continuing from yesterday's gemara. We are on the topic of Kiyum Shtaros. Again, let's do an overview recap, and then we'll continue from in the actual gemara itself. Kiyum Shtaros is the idea that even though a document is a valid vehicle which allows me to collect money from somebody, it testifies that in fact somebody owes me money as long as I'm the note holder. Nevertheless, the Chachamim put a safeguard in a shtar, and that is that we have to be mekayim, we have to validate, we have to certify the people who sign on the shtar. This process of certification can be done in one of three ways. Number one, the witnesses themselves who sign on the document step forward and they say, we're the ones who signed on the document. And then they do this obviously in front of Beis Din, and Beis Din then writes a little note on the document saying that this document has been certified. That little note is called a henpek. We will talk about that. The Gemara is going to be discussing that later on, not today. Two, second way that you could be Mekayim Shtar is that if other witnesses who recognize the signatures of the signatures. So if two other witnesses come and they say, we know the signature, we know that person's signature, that's his. So that's another way to validate it. And again, you need two other people, obviously, to do that. Three, the last way that you can certify a document, which we're going to be discussing in today's daf, is going to be comparing it to another document. Another document that's been certified, as we're going to learn later on today, it has to have been challenged and certified. It had to have won the challenge. So you can compare this note to another note, to a previously certified note, and that's going to be a third way to certify a document. Until you certify the document is not enforceable. The document cannot come to collect, and even though there are two valid witnesses who signed on the document, it does not matter. Certification is absolutely necessary in order for anyone to collect on the document. Therefore, as we learned back in the Mishnah, this is a basic point, that the witnesses who come and certify their own document, so now they will fall under the category of hapesha asar. They're the mouth that creates prohibition. Now, obviously, here we're talking about money. It's not prohibition. It's monetary law. But in the fact that they're now certifying the document, they are now locked. That document is now locked and loaded. The person now, the note holder, is able to collect based on their testimony. If now they want to come forward and they want to give other pieces of information, they have the right to do that because of the principle of Pesha Asr or Pesha Heter. They're the mouth that created Isr. They're also the same mouths that can create Heter as well. And so therefore, I'm just using the Mishnah's example. Nothing fancy. Therefore, if they come forward and they say, you know, we signed on the document, and yes, that signature belongs to us, but let me give you some more information. Did you know that at the time we signed it, we were children? Did you know that at the time we signed it, we were coerced, we were under duress? Did you know that at the time we signed it, we were psula edim? So as long as they're the ones who are being mekayim the shtar, so that they're the pesha asar, so then who are pesha hitter? So then they can also give this other information as well, which in this case obviously is not, it's not a heter, it's not an allowance, but in other words, it's going to devalue the note. They value the note, therefore they can devalue the note.
What are they assuming for themselves?
Again, the words heter and isser in this context is a borrowed term. Heter and Isser is not the right terminology for our discussion. It just simply means that if we believe him on point A, we'll have to believe him on point B. That's all it means. Don't get lost in the terminology of Isser and Heter. It doesn't apply over here.
Yeah, but the principle behind it is that there's some unbeneficial things to them. It's an advantage that produces.
Right, for them, right.
As a result.
That's a very good point. Meaning for them, for them themselves, they're the witnesses. They're just, you know, they're bystanders, but they're more than bystanders. But they're bystanders to the people who are really principally involved.
Right, so they don't disadvantage
them. Correct. Agreed. But again, it's the idea that their mouths are creating liability. Their mouths can also create the reversal of that liability. That's the general idea. We believe them on point A. We have to believe them on point B.
So the disadvantage could be for others, not necessarily.
Correct. Agreed. That's it. Right. And that's a very good point. Okay, yesterday we spent the daf, your tests, going over machlokus between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, meaning everything I just presented. That was the Mishnah, and that's really the opinion of the Chachamim. Rav Meir disagrees, and what we spent yesterday discussing is, how could Rav Meir disagree? And that was a good part of yesterday's daf. Moving along, we then move on to the discussion of, let's say they provide other information. Okay, so again, their first point was, that's our signature. And then let's say they say something to the tune of, do you know that that's a shtar amana? You know, that note is not a real note, meaning that the note was written, it was signed, we signed on it, but you know, there was no money that was really exchanged. It's what's called a shtar amana. Shtar amana, it's kind of like a letter of credit, but we noted yesterday that there's a basic difference between them. In other words, the note is written as if the money has been transferred, but they come along and they say, but you know, lender didn't actually give borrower the money. Lender said to the borrower, look, when you need the money, I'm going to give it to you, and let's write a note right now. Okay, so and as we described yesterday, is that a good thing? It's certainly not a good thing to write because it doesn't represent the truth. Is it a bad thing? The Gemara says, yeah. In other words, the Gemara quoted a pasuk in Iyov yesterday that in your ohel, in your tent, you shouldn't leave any avala, any kind of sin, iniquity. Nothing bad should be in your house. And the Gemara says, what's that a description of? The Gemara says, shtar amana. And so now when they testify and they say that that's their signatures, but the document was a shtar amana, so the Gemara's conclusion yesterday is we're not going to believe them. Why am I not going to believe them? Don't we? If we believe them on point A, don't we believe them on point B? Said the Gemara yesterday, that's self-incrimination. No one's going to be signing on a shtar amana. No one should be signing on a shtar amana. Why should no one be signing on it? Because it's a bad thing. Because it doesn't represent the truth. It makes someone liable to money that he doesn't actually owe as of yet. So you shouldn't be signing on it. The fact that they're stepping forward and they're saying that we're signing on the shtar amana, so the Gemara says that's something which you shouldn't be doing. It's an avala, it's an iniquity, and therefore they're self-incriminating if they say they did, and therefore we just simply don't believe them on that point. One other thing we'll go over, and then we'll continue from where we left off yesterday, and that is, what about shtar parua? What if the note's been paid? Meaning that generally speaking, what happens at the conclusion of a loan is that the borrower pays back the lender the money. Good. And then the lender hands over the note to the borrower, and the borrower will tear it up into as many pieces as he possibly can. Good. That's the general conclusion of a loan. What if, let's say, for whatever reason, which we're actually going to point out in just a second, let's say the borrower paid back the lender, didn't give back the note, holds the note. And let's say the witnesses now, I don't know how they know this information, but let's just assume they know. Let's say they testify that it's a shtar parua. Is that going to be credible? So the Gemara yesterday vacillated on this point, and the Gemara said could be or could not be. On one hand, if the note is still being held by the lender even after the satisfaction of the obligation, that's obviously not right. Meaning, why would he be holding a note? It shouldn't be. And nobody should be a party to such a activity. On the other hand, the Gemara pointed out yesterday, there are occasions where it's justifiable that the lender could still be holding the note. For example, this is where we ended off yesterday. For example, if the lender, let's say, forwarded the money to pay the sofer in a loan situation, it is the obligation of the borrower to pay the sofer. Sofer's got to get paid for writing up the documents. So usually the borrower is the one who's paying all those fees, and as I pointed out yesterday, it's understandable, meaning he's the one benefiting from the loan. So the borrower is going to be paying those fees. So let's say the borrower had absolutely no money, he couldn't pay those fees. So the lender not only lent the money, but also fronted the money to pay the sofer. So the Gemara says, in such a situation, I can easily see the lender saying to the borrower, look, I'm glad you paid me back my loan, but you got to pay the sofer, and I'm just simply going to hold the note until you pay back the sofer. So under those circumstances, the Gemara says, I could see a case where we could justify how the lender will be holding the note even after the loan has been paid. Itmar. Let's continue. This is exactly where we left off yesterday. We're on your testament base, and we are continuing. Sefer Shenamuge. If you have, let's say a sefer. Sefer over here means any sefer from Tanakh. Rashi says, Torah Nevim Uksuvim. And it is not proofread. It's not checked. So Amar Rabbi Ami Ad Lami Yom Muta Lashosa Mikam Be'elechasa Lashosa. So for 30 days, Gemara says you get like a pass. Meaning it's not easy to find somebody to check it, to get a sofer. So for 30 days you get a pass. But After 30 days, the Gemara says, you are now held accountable. You're held liable. Now, what exactly does that mean? Meaning, we're not talking about monetary law right now. We're talking about having an unchecked Sefer Torah with possible mistakes in it, and you didn't get it checked. So, what does it mean that you're on the hook? I'm not totally sure, but the Gemara says, Mishum Shenema, Tishkam Ba'olah Chavla. But the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Iyov once again. Pasuk in Iyov says that you shouldn't hold an Avla in your house. And I know this is an interesting take on the Pasuk, but the Gemara says, included in that is having a Sefer Torah that's in a Mugah. It's not been proofread, it's not been checked, there's possible mistakes in it. Gemara says that's a bad thing. Right? The Sefer Torah, obviously, the precise nature of a Sefer Torah is such that Gemara says it's inexcusable to have one in your house that hasn't been checked over. I'm Rav Nachman.
Is this checking the first time?
I'm unclear about that. That's a great question. I'm not clear. Rashi writes Muga Mintayo Shebo. There are mistakes in it. So I'm not sure if Rashi is describing where we already found mistakes or just simply was never checked a second time. I'm not clear. It's a good question. Okay, Amar Rav Nachman. Eidim she'amru amana hayu dvareinu, ein emanim. Okay, so as we already explained, but the Gemara now is going to go over this again. According to Rav Nachman, the witnesses come and say, amana hayu dvareinu, meaning we signed on a document, but there was no money transferred. It's just a note that was written to the quote-unquote lender, so that if and when money wants to be transferred, so he's got a note already written. Okay, so they're not believed, and again, as we described yesterday and as went over in the review, it's because that's self-incrimination, and that we just simply don't believe them. Moda hayu devarenu ein emanim. Now, what if they say moda? What does moda mean? Moda means that immediately prior to the signing of the loan, so one of the parties says, this is all happening against my will. Meaning, he states clearly, it's like anti-kavana. Right, we're not talking about mitzvahs right now, we're talking about an obligation. But a person can say, before signing his name or having witnesses sign on something that he is agreeing to, he states verbally right beforehand, I don't agree to it. This is not my interest, this is not my will. This is what's called moda. You remember, we've used that term earlier in the Gemara, not in Ksuvos, but going all the way back to Shabbos. Remember the famous Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Peches? Gemara over there talks about how when we receive the Torah, so what did Kadosh Baruch Hu do? Just encourage us. So he took the mountain and he held it over our head and he said, this is a deal, you'll accept the Torah, and if not, I'm just going to drop the mountain right in your head. And the Gemara says, good. That was us accepting the Torah. What happened to Nasav and Ishma? Tosas over there. If you take a look at Tosas, he's bothered by that question. He gives an answer. But anyway, so but then the Gemara goes on to say over there in Shabbos, Moda Rabba La Raisa. We can declare that we weren't consenting partners in this agreement. The Gemara says, and so like any agreement where one of the parties was not a consenting party, we could back out. And then the Gemara says, remember the continuation of the Gemara? The Gemara says, eventually, historically, we did finally commit to the Torah willingly, and that was at the story of Purim. The Gemara says, "Kima v'kiblu." We accepted the Torah willingly. What exactly the Gemara means over there? Why Purim is connected? Okay, for another time. Anyway, but that's. That's the word moda used elsewhere. Over here, the Gemara says moda yudvarenu and einamanim. So if you say moda, which again the witnesses are stepping forward and saying, look, we signed on the document, but one of the parties said he doesn't want to be a part of it. So einamanim, they're not believed. Okay, mar bravashi amar manu yudvarenu einamanim moda yudvarenu einamanim. Mar bravashi disagrees with the Rav Nachman on one of the points. If they say amanu hayad varenu, if they say that this is a shtar mana, this is what the witnesses are testifying, we do not believe them. And again, the reason why we don't believe them is because they're self-incriminating. No one should be party to signing on a document that is not where no money's been actually transferred. Meaning, if the document doesn't represent what really happened, so that's what's called a navla, that the Gemara says yesterday. So you can't be party to that. And if you're stating, if you're testifying that you were party to that, that's self-incrimination. We don't believe you. However, moda yudvarenu ne'emanim. But if you say moda yudvarenu, so then you're believed. Why? So the Gemara says, my time, I need tell likasev, I don't tell likasev. Because as far as As far as the Amanah Shtar Amanah is concerned, it should never have been written. Meaning that no one should have been a party to it, but even more fundamentally, it's wrong. It's just simply wrong, and it shouldn't have been written. But when it comes to Moda, when it comes to the person admitting that somebody stepped forward and said, I was not a consensual partner to it, so the Gemara says, but he didn't obviously want to be part of it, but obviously he was being coerced. So, just to get the bully off of his back, so to say, so you could write the document. Like the Gemara said yesterday, you don't have to give up your life for writing a false document. And if somebody's bullying you and someone is really threatening you, so and all you need to do is just write a document to get him off your case, so that you're allowed to do. And the witnesses are allowed to sign. So the Gemara says that that's not self-incrimination, not like writing a shtar mana. Bamine Rava Mirav Nachman Tanayu Dvareinu Mahu. So, Rava asked the following question from Rav Nachman. Look, Rav Nachman, you're of the opinion that witnesses cannot testify that it was a shtar mana. They cannot testify that it was a moda. Fine. But what about the following? What if the witnesses are testifying tonight? Okay, what we'll call an addendum, meaning that the shtar was written up, shtar looks good, right? A owes money to B, or whatever the shtar obligates. And the witnesses come forward and say, yeah, but you know what? There was also a condition. Now, granted that the condition wasn't written down, it was an oral condition, but the witnesses are testifying that there was a condition as well. An addendum, if you will, to the shtar. Can they do that? So, and by the way, what they're saying really is that although the shtar looks like everything is here in the shtar, but what they're testifying is, yeah, but we're not, the obligation hasn't been created yet because the condition hasn't been met yet. For whatever condition is placed into the document. Can they testify, verbally testify to a condition? Fine, that's the question. So the Gemara says, look, as far as Shtar Mana, Shtar Moda, what they're essentially saying is that this document is fundamentally flawed. Either there was no money that was transferred, Shtar Mana, or Moda, or one of the parties verbally said that he does not concede to the contents of the document. So what they're really doing is they're uprooting the document, and we don't believe them because, again, according to Rav Nachman, both of those are self-incriminating. But on the other hand, maybe you can make the following argument, that if all the witnesses are saying is, hey, there was more to this document, there was a condition set forth in this document which wasn't actually written down, they're not challenging the principal content of the document. They're fine with it. They're just simply adding to the document. So maybe over here, maybe they're credible on this point. So Amalek Yasul Kamal Ladina, Amrin Lahu, Zilu Kimu, Tanaichu, Vichos Ladina. So Rav Nachman gives a very straight answer. And he says that if they were to come in front of me, I would say to them, go and satisfy the condition that the witnesses are testifying about, and then go to court, and then go collect the document based on that. So fine. So Rav Nachman's response is, it works. When I say it works, meaning the witnesses can testify that there was a condition that was added on to the obligation. Eid Omar Tanai ve'Eid Omar Einu Tanai. Gemara now advances this discussion one more step. Let's say one witness says that there was a condition, and the other witness says that there wasn't a condition. So again, the two witnesses who signed on the document are validating their signature. Document looks good. And now, if both of them agree to the fact that there was an addendum, there was another clause to the document that was verbally agreed upon, fine. We believe them. What if one of them says there was and one of them says there wasn't? So now it gets a little trickier. So Amar of Papa Tarvai Bishar Malia Kamasade Vahad Kamar Tanahi Havale Chad Vein Dvarv Shalacha B'Makam Shayim. So Rav Papa says, here's how we'll handle it. We'll say it like this. They both agree to the document, to the basic content of the document. Fine. And it's two witnesses who are validating a document, so give the document the check. Good. Now, there's an addendum. Maybe yes, maybe no. One of them says yes, one of them says no. The one of them says yes is being contradicted by the document. The document that was just validated by two witnesses. Granted, one of those two witnesses is one of these people who's saying that there's an additional clause, but, again, let's divide. Pagina and Debura. So let's divide the two. On one hand, the document is totally legitimate, validated by these two. On the other hand, one of the two says that there was an addendum. But he's being contradicted by the actual document itself, which doesn't mention an addendum, so therefore Rav Papa says it's two against one.
There's a havamina we hold from one witness and none other?
It wasn't a havamina, it was just, can we use his testimony to validate the document at the same time rejecting, it's not even just ignoring, rejecting his testimony that there was an addendum. That's the trick over here. So, and that's basically what the Gemara is going to protest to. Matkila Ravuna Bereda Rav Yeshua Yachya Filo Tavainami. So, the Gemara challenges, I understand. If both of them say that there was an addendum, so aren't they? And what did Rav Nachman say just four lines earlier? We believe them. Isn't their testimony being contradicted by the document? Doesn't the document not mention an addendum? And they're testifying to an addendum? And Rav Nachman says, we believe them. Can't we make the same argument that the document is contradicting their testimony? Ela Amrin and Haini Lamakar Su Dai Sakasi, Hainam Lamakar Su Dai Sakasi. So the Gemara says that, what do we say? That they're coming to uproot their original testimony. So here too, we're coming to say that they're going to uproot their original testimony. Meaning, just like in the case of Modan Amana, they're uprooting the original testimony, so too over here, those who are claiming now that there's an addendum also is coming to uproot their original testimony. And the Gemara says, Ravuna Breda Rav Yeshua. And the Gemara says the halacha is like Ravuna Breda Rav Yeshua, which is that we don't believe them when they say amana, neither do we believe them when they say there's an addendum. And the reason why is because that's contradicting the basic contents of the document itself. Unlike when Rav Nachman ruled above. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Shtayim chosim al ashtar mesa. Okay, we have a brisa now, more on this topic of kiyum shtaros. Let's say two people sign on the document and they die. Ubar shtayim in ashuk v'amri yadana shiksav yadam hu. And now, you need validation. So, of the three ways to validate, to certify the signatures, so obviously we lost one of those three ways. Because the original signatures of the document have passed on. So now, what's left? Two ways to validate the document. So, so two other witnesses come and they testify, yeah, we know the signatures, that's them. Aleihem HaShalom. Aval, Anusim Hayu Ketanim Hayu Psulei Edim Hayu. But then they themselves point out, but let's give you some more information, and that is at the time when they signed it, they were coerced, they were minors, they were disqualified. Hare Elu Ne'emanim. So they're believed. Again, the principle of Pesha Asar Hu HaPesha Hitter. Even though, mind you, by the way, it's a little bit of a bigger chiddush than what we said yesterday. Because over here, it's not the principal witnesses themselves, it's others. But the idea is still the same idea. Because they're validating the document, they're providing the document its force, its power to collect. And so since you give them credibility to do that, we also give them the credibility to discredit the document. But if, let's say, the witnesses' signatures could be substantiated by, let's say, another set of witnesses, or let's say we compare this document to another document, and the Brisa points out, and by the way, when you compare it against another document, that document that you compared it to had to have been challenged, and the document was upheld against the challenge. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Ein elu ne'emanim, these witnesses are not believed. And again, the reason why they're not believed is because the only time that they're believed is hapesh aser hu hapesh yeter. Only when they're providing the document with its force can then are they then accredited to discredit the document. But if others or another document is giving this document its force, so then they're not believed. The Gemara says u'magbinan dei kibishtar ma'alya, but the Gemara says I don't understand. Let's now take a summary statement of what we just saw. Here's a document, signed by two witnesses, validated by another set of witnesses or by comparing it to another document. And along comes two other people and they say, you know what, let me tell you a story. Two other people are saying, and that is that the original witnesses who signed this on this document, at the time when they signed it, they were children coerced, psula edus. So the Gemara says, so okay, I understand that we don't give them full credibility because we don't have the principle of pesha asur or pesha hitter. I get that, but you have two people coming forward into Beis Din, two kosher witnesses who are now challenging the veracity of this document, the legality of this document, by asserting that the witnesses at the time when they signed were not competent, were not kosher witnesses. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. I understand we're not going to believe the second set of witnesses, but are we going to dismiss them outright? That's two witnesses against two witnesses. That's Edim HaMachishim Zedzeh. They contradict one another. But this bothers the Gemara. Should. It's a basic question. We're going to collect with this document. The Gemara says, I don't understand. What do we have over here? Two witnesses against two witnesses. I'm Rav Shesha. So the Gemara gives an attempted answer. Rav Shesha is his answer. Big Chiddush coming up. Although it's going to be really big, the Gemara is not going to accept it. I'm Rav Shesha. You know, Hachasha is very similar to Azama. Okay, now, let's go over the basics. Hachasha, when I have one set of witnesses coming forward and saying, here are the facts, and the second set of witnesses coming forward and saying, nope, they're wrong. Those aren't the facts, these are the facts. So those are witnesses that contradict one another. What happens in the case of Edom and Machishim Zedzeh when they contradict one another? Two forces equal but opposite equals zero. We don't know. Good. And then we have Edim HaMazimim. Edei HaZama, we'll get to Makos, we'll discuss it in detail, first parak of Makos, and that is the idea of, when I have two witnesses who do not challenge the testimony of the first set of witnesses, but simply say, how could you possibly have testified? You were with us in such a place at the time when you claim that the crime or loan or whatever took place. And what's the Chiddush HaTorah? The Chiddush HaTorah is, we're going to believe the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. So that's Edom HaMazimim. Rav Sheshis is now going to provide a Chiddush, a tremendous Chiddush, and that is that Hachash and Azama are really, they're not the same, obviously, because in Hachasha, they just cancel each other out. In Hazama, we believe the second set over the first set, so it's not the same, but Rav Sheshis says they're similar. And what does that mean? Top of Chaf Amar Aleph. Today's daf. And the Gemara explains that, just like in the case of Hazama, Hazama does not work unless you have the first two witnesses here. Meaning, Hazama means we're going to do to them what they intended to do to the defendant. But that only will be so only if they're present. Rashi quotes a pasuk. Even without a pasuk, it's kind of intuitive. You can't punish them for what they wanted to do unless they were here. But still, in other words, it's a halacha and hazama. Hazama, you need the two principal people here. So, same thing by hachasha. In order to do hachasha, you need the original two witnesses here. If the two witnesses are not here, Rav Shesha says, you can't do hachasha as well. Which right now what the Gemara is saying, it's such a big chiddush. Right now what the Gemara is saying is, those two original witnesses who signed on the document, they died. You know what that means now? Their testimony is unchallengeable. Because you can only challenge only when the original witnesses are alive. Just like by Hazama, you can only do it when the original witnesses are alive. So too by Hachasha, you can only do it when the original witnesses are alive. Okay. That's the suggestion by Rav Sheshis, and that's why right now the Gemara is arguing you can collect based on this document, even though two other witnesses are challenging. It sounds like a big chiddush. It is a big chiddush, and the Gemara is going to have a very difficult time accepting this. Amalei Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Sheshis, I don't understand. So Rav Nachman says, I don't understand. If let's say we could resurrect the dead. Or let's go back in time and have them here. And we contradicted them. So then what does that mean? They're contradicted. So hashta delesnu. And now they're not here. So how does them not being here assist their argument, assist their case? First of all, you know what they may end up doing? Meaning they're not here right now. We don't know. But you know what's a possibility? Possibility is, is that they're going to agree to the second set of witnesses. Second set of witnesses are saying, "Hey, you know, at the time when they signed it, they weren't kosher edim. Who knows? Maybe the first two witnesses will say, yeah, you know what, they're right." Meaning, Rav Nachman's point is that just now that they're dead and now we don't know what they're going to say, doesn't make their case stronger. If anything, it makes their case weaker now. Because all we have is their signatures on the document. We don't know what they were at the time when they actually signed it. Yes, like the Gemara said yesterday, there's a chazaka that they were kasher edim. But again, we don't know. Two witnesses now are stepping forward and saying they were not kasher at the time when they signed it. Their absence over here shouldn't make their case stronger. If anything, their absence over here should make their case weaker. They can't defend themselves, but at the same time, they may end up agreeing with what's being said by the second set of witnesses. Or Rav Nachman is saying is, I can't understand how their absence over here can make their case any stronger.
But wasn't the first document verified?
Good. So, meaning, yes, you're absolutely right. And what does that mean? It means that we have a verified document that's stated by two witnesses that A owes B money. But now you have two other witnesses coming. So it's Edom HaMachishim. They argue. So Elam Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, okay, we're going to go back to the Braisa. We're going to re-ask the same question, but we're going to give a much different answer. So again, let's re-ask the question, and then let's give Rav Nachman's answer. Question. Two witnesses signed on the document. They're dead. The document has been validated. Their signature has been verified. And now along comes two other witnesses and said, what's going on over here? These two, when they signed the document, they were not good. They weren't kosher witnesses. So what did the Braisa say? The second two are not believed. What did the Gemara ask? It's two against two. What are we doing over here? How can we believe the first set over the second set? So, Elam Rav Nachman, that's the question. Here comes Rav Nachman's answer. Uki trei la hadei trei, v'uki mamona becheskas marei. Rav Nachman says, correct. When we say eino ne'emanim, it means we don't believe the second, but it also means we don't believe the first. In other words, you have two witnesses contradicting each other. Two forces equal, but opposite equals zero. Good. Now, where does the money go? Becheskas marye, in the whoever the muchzak is. Meaning now that we don't know who should be the holder of the money, so what's going to determine who's the holder of the money? Answer, the holder of the money. Chazaka.
Which is the borrower.
Huh?
Which is the borrower.
In this case, it would be the borrower.
So
now, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So in effect, they invalidated it. The bottom line becomes intestinal.
Right, correct.
Invalidated.
Correct, and right.
The second set of witnesses basically win.
And win is...
Whatever.
Right, correct. Winner and loser in money and monetary law is...
Right, they accept it.
Correct. Right, and it does... It is more challenging. I'll give you this. It's certainly more challenging when the Bryce ends off with the words Ein Elu Ne'eman, and the second set are not believed. Again, that's what forced Rav Sheshis into the Chiddush. It sounds like from the Braisa that we're believing the first two. The Gemara's conclusion right now, which again is it's the more logical conclusion, just doesn't fit well into the language of the Braisa, is how can you believe the first over the second? Okay, so it just simply means that we're not believing the second set with any more veracity than we are the first set. Okay. Mida dahave nichsa de Bar Shataya, the Gemara says, you know what it's like? It's like the property of Bar Shataya. Okay, his name is Bar Shataya. The word Shataya sounds like Shota, and there's a reason why, as we'll see in just a moment. De Bar Shataya zaba nichsa. Bar Shataya sold property. Okay. So in other words, now we're talking about property over here. Tosfos makes this point clear. I'll try to be as clear as possible. We're talking about property right now. Property, the idea of chazaka by property does not mean that the one who is currently occupying the land. That by itself is not. Now, as we discussed in the beginning of this parak, 3 years of uninterrupted, I'll learn how to speak English in just a moment. 3 years of uninterrupted occupancy on the property does make you the owner of that property, but we're not talking about that right now. We're just, by land, sitting on the land does not make you the owner. What makes you the owner? A presumed original owner who's holding a title. In this case, Bar Shataya is the original owner, and he sold the land. Zabin Nechse. Also betray Amr Kishu Shota Zabin, also betray Amr Kishu Chalam Zabin. Now, Bar Shataya, as his name indicates, had a bit of an issue. And that is that he was holding on to sanity, but very loosely. Sometimes he was sane and sometimes he was deranged. And he went in and out of his, what we would call in our modern terminology, psychotic episodes. So, the witnesses to it now. In order for any transaction to be valid, so both parties have to be of sound mind. Okay, good luck to any one of us. So obviously we're speaking relatively. So two witnesses said, you know, at the time of the sale he was crazy, and two witnesses, no, at the time of the sale he was clear, he was lucid. Now, what's the conclusion? Conclusion is, look. We don't know, meaning we have contradicting reports by the two witnesses. So therefore, what happens to the property? It goes back to the original chazaka. The chazaka is Bar Shataya, meaning he was the rightful owner of the land. But the Gemara points out, for this halacha to work, we had to have known the land belonged to Bar Shataya. V'lo amaren, and that brings us to the next point of the Gemara. V'lo amaren al diyisle chazaka davusa. And that only means that it's the land is going to bounce back to Bar Shataya if we know that he was the original owner. Dehainu, he got it as a Yerusha from his father. But the Gemara points out, if let's say Bar Shataya was the one who purchased land from somebody else, so that means now we never really even knew if the land actually belonged to him. As Rashi explains, when he purchased the land, could be that he was crazy. So, and when he sold the land, same state of insanity. So in that case, we're not going to say, if I have two contradictory witnesses, oh, the land should go back to him. He never was the absolute rightful muhzak of the land to begin with. This halacha that the land's going to go back to him is only if the land was inherited by his fathers. Amar Rabbi Abbao. Rabbi Abbao says, here's a halacha, not like what Rav Shesha said earlier this morning, but rather, you only do hazama to the witnesses only in front of them, only in their presence, but in terms of hachasha, that can be done even not in their presence. And then the Gemara points out another intuitive point, but still the Gemara is going to spell it out, and that is as follows. Let's say two sets of witnesses do a hazama to the first set of witnesses. So that means, first set of witnesses establish a certain fact, right? A owes B money, or A committed a crime, and the second set of witnesses come along and say, those first set of witnesses, what are they talking about? They were with us at the time. And let's say the first set of witnesses are not there. They moved on, let's say they died. So on one hand, it's not hazama, because the halach is, in order for it to be hazama, they have to be here and present. It's not hazama. But the Gemara points out, it's still hachasha, meaning the second set of witnesses are really discrediting what's being said by the first set of witnesses. So, it doesn't fall under the category of hazama, but it still falls under the category of hachasha. Amar mar. Im yesh edim sheksav yadam huzeh, osha yeksav yadam yosim emakam achim ishtar shekar alav irav uchzom ebeisim, ein ne'emanim. Gemara goes back to the brisa that we quote on the bottom of Yutes Amud Beis, and the Gemara now is just going to sit on one point that the brisa made. You want to certify a document, you want to certify the signature. So again, three ways to do it. The original signatures themselves, others who recognize, or a third way is to compare it to another document. Okay. In the brisa, we were dealing with the original witnesses have died, so we lost option number one. You can set the brisa, you can either have two other witnesses come and testify that's their signature, or you can compare it to another document. But the brisa said, when comparing it to another document, that document that you're comparing it to had to have been challenged and upheld. And the document was upheld. And the Gemara points out, that's an important detail. Kara alav ira in, lo kara alav ira lo. The document had to have been upheld. Fine. In order for the document to have been a certified, ratified document, and you're comparing it against another, it has to be a document that was challenged and upheld, so that we know that the document that we're comparing it with is quote unquote as valid as you can get. Amin Aradai. Amin Kamen Shar Elamishtek Suvos. o mishtei sados. In the Yeshiva Nahada, they say that if you're going to compare the signatures of this document, an uncertified one, against a document that was certified, it has to be against two documents, two ksuvas, okay, that obviously a ksuva document has two signatures on the bottom, or two sale documents of property. And in the case of property, v'husha achlum ba'aleihem gimel shanim uvishofi. We have to know that these sales were absolutely good sales. Best proof that these sales were good is that the buyer of this property sat on the land and ate the property, the produce of the land, for 3 quiet years. That means good. Sale was a good sale. That means the witnesses who signed on this document are valid witnesses, and the signatures are good signatures. So again, as much verification as possible, and now you're going to compare this document, the uncertified one, against the other two. So again, either two ksuva documents or two sale documents, but knowing that these sales were valid sales. The Gemara says, these documents that we're comparing it against have to have been held by other people other than the principal person himself. So the Gemara says, but let's say he goes to base and he says, here's a document, this guy owes me money. And look, here's the two signatures. Well, we need to certify. Oh, no problem at all. The guy goes back to Beis Din. Here are two other documents you can compare it to. The Gemara says, that's no good. Meaning that when we're comparing against documents, the documents had to have been held by other people. So, the Gemara says, look, what are we worried about? Obviously, we're worried about a forgery. Meaning we're worried about the fact that this document that he's currently holding right now, that's not certified, even though it does have signatures on the bottom, but maybe he forged it. And the Gemara says, so what's the difference? Meaning if he's the one who's bringing the two documents from his own home, so it's very easy now for him to forge because he's got other signatures and he's just going to compare and he's just going to sign. Gemara says, if the document's held by others, can he go over to the other person's house? You know, so a lot of us have our ksuvas up on the wall. And study the signature and then go back home and just simply reproduce the signature based on what he saw. The Gemara says, "Kule hai lo matzi mechavein." The Gemara says the forgers are not that good. Forgers, if they have the original document in front of them, and then they can copy off the original that's in front of them, the Gemara says that they're capable of doing. But to go to somebody else's house, to see in somebody else's house, and then on memory to transcribe it and do a forgery based on memory, the Gemara says people are not that good. And so the Gemara says no. That, in other words, it's enough of a verification where We're pretty sure that they can't forge a document that they're not currently holding. Okay, Tana Rabbana. Kosev Adam Eduso Al Ashtar Umeid Aleha Afilu L'Acher Kamashanim. Okay, Gemara goes over the following halacha. Okay, I don't know about your memories. My memory is starting to go. Now I'm not really complaining. Baruch Hashem, Kadosh Baruch has been very good to me in terms of my aging, but you know, I tend to forget. I see, don't share this with my students. But, you know, I see a student that I had 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and Baruch Hashem, I've had a lot of them, and okay, so I sometimes lose on a name. So sometimes what you do is you write like a little note to yourself, and then you look at the note, and okay, good, I got it. Okay, you write notes. They write doctors who see many patients, so they got to write notes. They got to remember what happened. So to rely strictly on memory, that's not going to help. So they write notes. Okay, good. We all do it. So we all write notes. So can you do the following? Let's say you have testimony, but it's been a very long time and it's very hard to remember. So what you did is you wrote yourself a note, and then 5 years, 10 years, 15 years later, you testify. You looked at your note and you testified. Is that testimony? Such a good question. Such a basic question. Meaning, really, what we're tapping into right now is, what is the nature of testimony? Does testimony have to be strictly based on your memory? Or can testimony be based on a note? Now, in this particular case, it's a note that you yourself wrote. Yeah, good or no good? So, the Gemara, we started the discussion with the Brisa. I'm going to reread the Brisa. Tana Rabbanan. Kosev Adam Eidus Al Ashtar. Umeid Alei Afil Al Acher Kamashanim. Good. So, the Brisa says pretty clearly, you can write something on a document, look at the document years later, and provide testimony based on what you wrote. Amar Rav Huna vehusha zochra me'atzmo. Rav Huna says, good, but you got to remember it. Meaning, if you have no recollection of it whatsoever, and all you have to work with is that which is written on the note, I don't remember, but the note says so. Just recently, somebody showed me a picture from yeshiva of now 25 years ago. So someone showed me a picture from yeshiva of 25 years ago. So I have no recollection of the picture, of what happened, of the... I didn't remember a thing in the picture. And, okay, in other words, so Rav Huna says, obviously that's just an example, but that's no good, meaning that doesn't serve as testimony. In order for the testimony to be good, you have to have some sort of memory of the item itself. And I guess, I'm not totally sure if what I'm saying is correct, the note is allowed to help your memory, but it cannot be the sole source of that which you're saying. Rav Yochanan amar af pi she'ein zochra me'atzmo. And Rav Yochanan says, no, it's not necessary. It's not necessary for you to remember it, as long as you wrote it down in a note, as long as you're reading from the note, that's enough. Amar Rabbi Shmami Nami Rav Yochanan Hani Betray Diyadi Sadusa. So the Gemara says, so what do you see from Rav Yochanan? That you can be reminded of something from a note that you yourself wrote. So the Gemara now is going to take Rav Yochanan's idea, is going to take his concept, and it's going to advance it to the next step. And that is the following. Rav Yochanan, this is Rabbi's comment. What do we see from Rav Yochanan? That let's say Hani Betray Diyadi Sadusa. Let's say I have two people who know testimony. And let's say one of the two witnesses just forgot. Okay, we're human, we forget. And the other witness nudges the first witness and says, oh, you don't remember? Let me remind you. And he jogs his memory. So that would work. Much like the note that you wrote to yourself is enough to provide for you your memory, it's reconstructing your memory, so too would a second witness be able to jog your memory on an event that took place years past. Ibailu atzmamai. And let's finish off today with the following discussion. This is such an interesting discussion. What if you yourself don't remember? Let's say the other witness is not helping you either. What about the Baal Din? What about the actual litigant himself? Can he help jog your memory? So Atma Mai, Rav Chaviv Amar Afil Atmo, Amar Barai Rav Ashi Amar Atma Lo. So the Gemara brings down a machlokus on this issue of whether the litigant himself can quote unquote jog your memory. Veho Chasa Atma Lo. So the Gemara says, but the halacha is no. The other witness can jog your memory. A self-written note can jog your memory. But the litigant himself cannot jog your memory. The Itzurba Mirabanan hu afilo atzmo. And then the Gemara concludes. But let's say, Itzurba Mirabanan. Let's say, Rashi says we're talking about the witness. Is a Talmud Chacham. And right now he doesn't remember. And he's struggling, and he's trying, and he's struggling. And the Baal Din, the litigant, nudges him. You don't remember? And kind of helps his memory along. If the witness is a Talmud Chacham, the Gemara says that's fine. Now, I feel atzmo ki had Rav Ashi, and the Gemara finishes up with a story. So Rav Ashi had testimony regarding Rav Kahana, and Rav Ashi was struggling to get that memory back in his head. To take it out of the file. It was somewhere filed in his head, and it was he had recovery issues. So Amrle mi dekiy mar haisa dusa. So Rav Kahana says to Rav Ashi, "No, you remember?" Amrle lo. So Rav Ashi says, "No, I'm really struggling." So v'lav hach v'hach yava. Amrle lo yadana. And he keep pushing him. You don't remember this, and Rav Ashi kept saying no. Lesof itka Rav Ashi. Finally, Rav Ashi kept knocking his head, and finally got the memory out. So, and he testified. So chazal Rav Kahana dava mechasem. So now Rav Kahana was just uncomfortable. Right? The word mechasem, Rashi says megam game. Tama Rav Ashi shehed bedaver. Like Rav Kahana was like stammering, meaning this is not. He was very cynical, meaning all this time Rav Ashi didn't remember, and now Rav Ashi remembers. Rav Kahana is worried. Perhaps it was Rav Ashi really didn't remember, and it was Rav Kahana's intimidation. Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, relax. I really do remember. Meaning, I had a retrieval issue. I couldn't retrieve the memory. I've struggled, but finally I got it. Finally it came to me. So Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, don't worry. It's not you, it's really me. I'll tease it. I'll talk about this tomorrow. Can we now ask a very basic question to finish off today's daf? And that's the following. We just concluded with the Gemara today is that in order to testify, you have to remember. And a self-written note, says the Gemara, is fine, but you're going to read the note and it's going to jog your memory. And the Gemara says that's fine. It comes out pretty clear from the Gemara, and if you remember in Yevamos, we said this very clearly back in Yevamos as well, that in order for something to be called testimony, you have to say it. You have to say it orally. And that means that the written testimony by itself is insufficient. So how do shtaros work? All right, documents, what are documents? We've been discussing it now for the past 3 days. Documents are basically two witnesses signing on a document, saying that whatever written in the document is good. How is that testimony? They're not saying anything. They're signing on a document. Meaning testimony is when the witnesses actually say it. And the only thing we were addressing today is, well, they could write a note and help them jog their memory so that they could say it. In other words, testimony needs speech. So how do documents work? Well, there's a big Tosfos over here that starts on the bottom of this summit and goes to the top of the next. Tomorrow, I'll give you the highlights. I'll tell you how we address this very basic question.